Good evening and welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Amy and I am an alcoholic. We will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You can sign up for email or listen to previously recorded meetings on our website at simpleactions.net. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Anybody here in the room, first 30 days? Yes. Hey, John, welcome.
Glad you're here.
Good to have you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present, please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that the book Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism based on simple actions. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA Simple Act. This is the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 12, the second half. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Elizabeth M. and Jim W. I will read the first paragraph on page 96, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on the reading. Step 12, continue to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Okay, page 96. Suppose now you are making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. Who would like to go first? Am I? That's reading two.
Okay.
I'll see.
Sorry. My name is Elizabeth. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 29, 2017. My home group is this group, Simple Actions. I have a sponsor. I've worked through the 12 steps. I sponsor other women. I have service commitment. And I love step 12. I think it's nice to be able to end on this note. I am a little intimidated that Jim is here with me because he is amazing. So if I say crap, and he'll make up for it. So, all right. So suppose that you're making your second visit. And this takes me back to when I first came into the rooms. I had an amazing example where, you know, I probably have hundreds of white chips. And this one woman approached me at a meeting and she said, would you like to get coffee? And so we met and, you know, we're sitting there talking about the big book, and I was like, I don't think I have time for that. And so then I kept, you know, coming in and out of meetings and out of meetings. And one day I was at work, and my employers called the rescue squad, because apparently I wasn't functioning like someone at work should be. And they either said I had to leave or go with the ambulance. So I called this woman and I said, hey, I'm a little intoxicated. I'm at work. I don't know what to do. And she's like, I'll be right there. And she picked me up. She took me to 5 meetings that day, back to back to back to back. And I mean, I'm falling out of the chair. I'm like stumbling over this, and everyone is staring at me. And she just kept saying, just try to listen. And finally, after the 5th meeting, I was like, okay, I'll do whatever you say. Just take me home. And she continued to show up in my life for a long time. She was not my sponsor. She was a woman carrying the message for me. And what an example of exactly what I needed at that time. I thought she was annoying as hell. But later, when I got ready to say, like, I'm ready to commit to this program, the seed had been set for me. And so I was able to take that. She did give me lots of practical advice. And she let me make the decision. So when I came in and I got sober, I remember this newcomer came into a meeting, and I was like all about it, you know, giving her my book and giving her this and calling her and like incessantly trying to chase after her. That's not what had been done with me, but I definitely thought, oh, I can fix you, because, you know, it's easier to deal with someone else's issues than your own. But since then, I've learned that's not exactly the way that is the most attractive process for someone coming into the rooms. And I do love the last line where it says, if he decides to make a decision and tell a story, do not insist and let him consult someone else, because my experience has been that I connect with some people in the rooms, and other people, for whatever reason, their experience is different or the way they sponsor is different. So I definitely am excited about the idea that over time I'm learning by example through other strong women and men at the fellowship of how to approach the man who is asking for help.
I hope y'all can hear me. This is my disclaimer. They say the microphone works good, but I got 2 of these hearing aids in, not in each ear. I don't got 1 in each. But so if I'm talking too loud, you know, or I'm not talking loud enough, give me a heads up and I'll pretend I'm on the right sheet. You know, first of all, when I think about this, I think back about the very first time that when I started to get sober, and I've been sober about 6 months, and my sponsor called me. I've had 4 sponsors over the years, and he was my first sponsor, and he says, we're going to go on a 12-step call. I didn't know much about it other than I says, well, what do you want me to say? He says, nothing. He says, just come along. He said, matter of fact, it's best that you don't. Well, we got there, and it was a husband and a wife, and they were both drunkards and hooed out. I mean, I don't know if they knew who we were or what we were there for or anything else, and they were cussing each other out and this and that. So I kept thinking, oh, I'm sure these 2 will whip me before I get out the door. I mean, it was right on the verge of going into combat. But as I begin to go on and with that same sponsor, I always talk about sponsorship, because I've had 4 sponsors over these many years, and each of them knew it was the right man that came into my life at the right time to where I was at and what I needed to go and what I needed. And every one of them full believed in service work. Every one of them had sponsors. Every one of them used those sponsors to call and get a hold of or something, you know, hey, I'm up against this or I'm up against that. So I began to learn from that how this stuff must work. Now, it took a while for me to believe that I was an alcoholic until the very end, as any of us in here that are alcoholics have given to that. And for me, that's where the awakening began. I didn't know that's where it began. Little did I know that someone would be working with me for the first time while I sat in Navy's alcohol rehab center for 6 weeks. And all I thought was I wanted the heat off. If I could just get in there, go through that place, get a clean bill of health, and then go back. So when I first got there, I really didn't have much intention of getting sober. I just wanted to get out of the trouble I was in. But something happened while I was there. They began to introduce me to this book. They also began to introduce me to the 12 and 12. And I began to see some things in there that I thought, I'm going to give too much of the store away here. I've got to keep the Chiefs in the Navy. You know, I got these conditions I got to place on. But I finally begin to see that what the, it meant is just like what it says. Suppose you're making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps. There's probably many of us sitting in this room, the sponsor people that have had somebody got on, says, I want to do, they go along for a while and the heavy lifting starts coming about getting in the book, reading it, and they start backing off or they leave. You try to call them and try to reach out. It doesn't make any difference. Well, I think I'm all right now. I think I've exaggerated that too much. I'm not that bad. And many of us who are sitting in this room probably use some of the same kind of words ourselves when we had this. But when the eyes begin to open, I think for any one of us who are alcoholics and have bought into this whole idea, and it says, suppose he has read this volume, says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. That's the beginning. For any one of us, we start trying to give some practical advice to the man or the woman who's come to us for some kind of help. And the other thing is not that, for me, I found out through one of my sponsors, man, you don't have to browbeat him. You don't have to take the big book and beat him up with the thing. I said, well, the guy ain't listening. He said, well, maybe he didn't want to hear the message you're conveying. And that just burned me up, you know. I said, a little better off here than that. I mean, you know, just I would tell my sponsor to shut up. I didn't have the courage. It didn't mean he was smaller than me or bigger. It just fit. But I learned through every one of those individuals that I've had the privilege to sponsor over the years, what I have learned is they've always brought something to the table for me as well. And I begin to learn from the men that I've been had the privilege to sponsor. I've been there during tough times, emotional times and happy times, and seeing their gains, seeing their setbacks. And in every occasion, they come through it. Not because I did anything miraculous, because they knew they could reach out to me, and it was in confidence. Didn't have to be any more. That's all it had to be. And I think that's the power of this fellowship. We never know when we're sponsoring or helping a newcomer coming through here, what it is the message. And it may come from us, it may come from an outside, but the point is you celebrate that. Every time they make that next step, you celebrate with them. So, partner, you're really making some. And that's, for me, is what I've learned from this book and what I've learned from this. And with that, I am going to shut my.
All right. The next reading is on page 98. It is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife. We simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God.
Thanks. So with this part, it definitely takes me back. I was reflecting on like the number of sponsors that I've had, and Jim said 4, and I probably have like 30, because in the beginning I would meet with someone and, you know, they would start to lay out what I needed to do as far as like meeting with them regularly, calling every day, calling at an appropriate time, having an intelligent conversation. You know, when that was just too much in the beginning, like, not, no, I need you to like tell me what the magic pill is that I need to ask for. Where's the man that's going to fix my life? Where's the job? Like, you need to provide that. Or I wanted financial counseling, or I wanted, you know, whatever. And so I would get to a point where I would just say, this isn't working for me. There's obviously something wrong with that sponsor. I'll just find another one. It wasn't until I remember there was one time I had a sponsor and I was at the Easy Desert Club, and she said something like, you smell like alcohol. And I was like, well, actually, let me be honest. You know, there is alcohol in my purse and some other dry goods, and I'll be happy to like flush them down the toilet in front of you. So I made this huge production of doing it. She was just like, what are you doing? And I said, well, you know, I need you to like me. She's like, that's not the relationship that we're trying to have here. You know, it took a while, and I will say the sponsor I have now is probably the longest relationship with a person that I've had outside of my family, where I didn't get to the point where I was just like, you were asking way too much of me. Like, I'm not into this. This is not my jam. I like to do it because my big brain can figure everything out. You're annoying me. So I would move on. And then it got to the point where I worked with one sponsor and we got to the fourth step. And I was like, cross-referencing my, you know, lovely charts that I made, and they were color-coded, and she looked at me and was like, bullshit. And so then I relapsed because everyone talks about how scary the fourth step is. And it wasn't until later where she finally came back to me and said, you know, you don't get unlimited chances with a spotter, you know, like, this is what I have to offer you. I'm more than happy to give it to you, but you are taking away my opportunity to serve someone who is ready to do the work. And I was so pissed that she would say something like that. But now on the reverse side, I have had to have that conversation and say, you know, this is what I was taught to do. This is what, how I work it. But then she also taught me a lot about not convinces to rely our assistance rather than upon God. So I would say things like, well, you know, the book tells me to just rely on God. And she's like, you don't even know how to get access to God because you're so busy thinking you know how to do it. And so, yeah, it took a while, but I've had to go back and apologize to her for the way that I acted in the beginning. I also thought when I first came in and other people tried to help me understand this, that I needed to fix everything that day. Like the first week, I needed to make all my amends. I needed to get myself out of debt. I needed to finish my degree. And, you know, I just wanted someone, like you said, to take the pressure off of me. And I didn't want to do the work. I in the beginning, I don't even know if I wanted to get sober. I just wanted people to leave me alone. And so coming through and understanding that I did not have to have a perfect life in order to be sober. I just simply had to follow directions and have a little bit of willingness to have the faith that my dependence upon people was definitely very great, but that my higher power put these women in my life for a reason, and I'm truly grateful that they did.
It's hard, for me, it's hard when I sit up here, I get and I hear other speakers and other people talk about it, and I can't help but my mind goes back reminding myself. I said I've had four sponsors since I've been in the fellowship. And so this part here says about he clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. That sort of sounded like me in those early. And then nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn the truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence on other people ahead of dependence on God. Well, some people have heard me say this before. I had four sponsors. The first one was the one that heard my fourth and my fifth step. And then I get a call from another guy he's sponsoring too. And he said, hey man, Eddie left town. I said, what do you mean, on vacation or something? And I had just finished my fourth and fifth with him. He's gone. I said, what? And he was. I never saw a man again. And I thought, oh my God, that fourth and fifth I give must have been a wreck. You know, they run the man clear out of town. I hope he didn't get, this is ego. I hope he didn't get drunk over it. So I immediately got another sponsor, which was another one of those guys. The first question he asked me, he says, how far are you at the steps? I said, well, I've done my fourth and the fifth. He says, time to move. Somebody to sit here and tell me, you know, this, that, and the other. I'm a grown man here. But what I found with him, he was a very different type of sponsor. And he did what he asked me to do. Not because he blew his horn about doing that, but it was evident what he had done and in his life and everything. And I began to see something in that man that I thought, well, maybe I ought to listen to him a little closer. Oh, Eddie's gone out of town. But what I learned from that was this whole idea of giving back and then expanding, going on 12-step calls more often, not turning down, taking phone calls and the phone watch and stuff in the fellowship. Well, I'm busy. I don't know if I can do all these. And then beginning to go on spiritual retreats with my sponsor and other AA men that we'd hang out for a weekend and just be us. And you'd see little pockets of us going off in the corners. And I've never forgotten, it was over in Hampton at it was like where the Catholic priests and stuff went for sabbaticals and so forth. But they had rented a room there for us guys to go over there. And so we got there, everybody, you know, sort of milling around. And so on the second day, my sponsor and I walked down, it must have been close to midnight. We walked down by a pier And we sat on the pier, and I never will forget this moment. There were all kinds of things that were churning up inside of me that I didn't know where to go with it. It was just, all he said, he says, and by then I'd gotten a job and I'd got retired from the Navy and all, but he made this statement, and he never looked at me or anything. Both of us sitting on the edge of that little old pier. He's knowing men allowed to cry too. And I sat there for a moment and I just began to sob. And all this pent-up shame and the stuff I carried for years, I thought I cleaned house doing the fourth and the fifth. I'd made the best effort I could, but this was taking it to a whole different level. And I began to realize things were changing dramatically. And from that night on, things did begin to. I began to open up more people. I began to, the guys I was sponsoring, allowing them more opportunity and those kind of things. And then, you know, when it says, job or no job, wife or no wife. I almost lost my wife. She stuck with me for a lot of years. She just, you know, and when it was over with, by the miracle of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, when it was over with, she and I remained married for 46 before she passed away. And she saw the good and the bad. And when I got my first 1-year medallion, an old boy, Smokey Burgess, he's gone to the biggest meeting in the sky, but Smokey called me up to hand me my 1-year medallion, and I sit down, and he says, look back at my wife, he says, Marge, you come on up here too, and she said, give her a medallion for a year too. I got a resentment on the spot. Well, hell, she ain't done nothing, I've done all the work here, and this woman just, and I'm sitting there, that's all running in my head, right, I'm still trying to act grateful, but I'm getting hot, you know, and she said, afterwards, she said, did you know he was going to do that? I says, no, I didn't. Are you okay? I said, I will be. You know, my feelings were hurt. I said, I done got a medallion. Now she's coming in here behind me, gets one. She's not even working in the fellowship. But it taught me something else too, that we can, or I'll speak for myself. That's all I can do. I could go so far, but then there were other people that. And my wife carried that 46 years before she passed. She carried that 1-year medallion that Smokey gave her to that for the rest of her life. And she had it in her purse because she knew what the 12 years before that had. And she treasured that. She treasured that. And she deserved that and even more. But that's some of the gifts that we don't expect. You know, in those early years, all of a sudden they opened the door and here it is. So with that, I'll quit running my mouth and pass it back over.
All right. We're continuing to read on page 98. Now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home. Though his family may be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness.
So I love that this is the paragraph that we're at today. So 5 years ago when I was sitting in my psychiatrist's office thinking like, that's going to fix me. And she looked at me and said, you're either going to the psych center on your own accord right now, or the police will take you. And so I got to the center and the reason I had broken down in her office was I had been confronted by my family, who is extremely, extremely supportive and loving and kind, but also huge enablers. And so I had told the psychiatrist that I had a breakdown because I literally was doing things at that time, like I drank all my brother's Southern Comfort and then filled it up with water, because that's a really intelligent thing to do. Southern Comfort is not clear. So of course I got caught. I had stolen my two-year-old nephew's pain medicine because he just had his eye removed. I took all of it and replaced it with, you know, something else. And I had done this to my dad and watched him for a week suffer in pain, and I didn't say a word. I just kept drinking over it and trying to make it go away. So when I got to the hospital, I called my dad and admitted everything that I had done. I did this. I stole thousands of dollars from you, blah, blah, blah. And he was just like, I know. What are you going to do about it? And I was like, So I called another friend. I called Amy from the hospital. I called Casey. And so what they instructed me to do was, like, I did not know what I was doing. Like, I needed to help to understand that the way that I was operating in my family system was really unhealthy. And it is a family disease. And the big book does talk about that a lot. So I basically had to learn that I had to start incorporating the principles into my home life. Because again, I just wanted them to leave me alone and let me drink like I needed to. I wanted their money too, but I didn't want them to tell me how to live my life. So it got to the point where my mom was living in a hotel. They were divided between what to do with me. And so there was nothing about spiritual demonstration in the beginning. So now we fast forward to 5 years later, and I've decided that I want a dog. And I'm living with my parents and taking care of them and their advanced age and healthcare and stuff like that. And so my mom's all on board. My dad, you know, I knew my dad is not excited about the idea of a dog. So I wrote him a letter yesterday. Well, my first plan was just bring the dog home and sneak it in my room. And, you know, then I'd be stuck with it. But I have been taught in this program to actually consider other people's needs and respect that, you know, you don't just do something against someone's will. So anyway, I wrote this, you know, huge two-page typed single space letter to my dad last night about all the reasons I needed this dog. And so the funny thing is, like, I am quick to want to, where it says, to argument and fact faulting and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. Ooh, that's where I go quickly. You know, like, well, this is what I need. Like, I really don't care what you need. But today I do care. Like, I've come a little bit of a way where I'm not sneaking the dog in, although I was at the pet store and trying to, like, buy stuff before he said yes. So he hasn't given me an answer yet, by the way. So I default to blaming you, because I want the heat off of me and I don't want to take responsibility. And I definitely don't want anyone to hold me accountable. So the idea of, little by little, the family may see their defects. I think that the nice thing about being in a family system, in the beginning, and I'm really grateful that my family has done this. Like, my mom went to Al-Anon. She started to learn, like, her own issues. And, you know, when I made my amends, it definitely was difficult on my part, but my parents looked at me and said, we just want you to promise that you're going to keep going to AA. Like, just keep doing that. And so the expectations have changed for us now. It's definitely, I try to consider someone else's feelings. That's not my go-to. But I definitely think that I was such a wrecking ball in their lives for so long. Every once in a while, my mom will come in the middle of the night to check, just out of habit, to make sure I'm still alive. And to me, that's heartbreaking, right? That someone is that afraid they can't sleep, that they need to go check that they're, you know, 40-some-year-old daughter is alive because of her drinking and drugging. I'm grateful today that my spiritual demonstration has changed, that, you know, slowly over time and living the principles in my life, I've been able to help heal some of that pain. And I don't feel like a piece of, you know, as much as I did when I first came in. So thank you.
It's can't help but whenever you're thinking about this and you know, in a group and stuff, and you've heard experiences, and this was another one. Sometimes, you know, the domestic problem. Yeah, we were still together, but there was a lot of things that weren't being said between me and my wife. You know, I was going in. You know, I was going to AA. I was doing all the mechanics of what it was. I was making some progress. There'd been some changes that she'd noticed and stuff, but she was still living in fear. Is this going to last, or is he going to go back? And all of a sudden, he didn't come in for 3 days now, and all those things that she was struggling with. I'm just on my merry way. I, you know, I've things are good. But then what I began to see was that the domestic problem was a bigger problem than what I realized. We had two children, and my daughter was the oldest, and she looked like a spitting image of her dad. And the problem was she had the same kind of attitude. You know, that was the other thing. And it says he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. And I remember thinking, how am I going to do this? How am I going to change this? How am I, you know, doing everything I can? And my sponsor, the same guy at that time, read what it says, man, and take that in. He says, proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home, because you still got a home. He says, now walk like you talk. He was pretty clear about it. He said, don't sit up there and act like you're better than your wife or your kids or anything. And I remember I was going a lot of 12-step calls, and I was only home usually one night a week, going to AA and on these 12-step calls and all that. And so my wife says, well, do you think one night you'd be able to stay home and spend time with me and the children? I got all irate. I said, what? I said, you wanted me to go to AA? I'm going to AA. I'm doing all the things. Now you... She said, I'm just asking maybe one night. So I said, I'm going to my sponsor. I'm going to talk to him about this. This is just nonsense. So I went and told him. He says, well, let me ask you. He says, how many nights do you stay home? I said, well, she's right. I said, I stay home one night. He said, what do you do the night you stay home? I said, I'm usually so tired from being busy those other six nights, I fall asleep on the couch. Got to get some rest somewhere. He said, man, you're sick of that first thought. He says, and he began to lay it out, you know, about that. He said, what kind of principle is that? I said, what are you talking about? He said, sounds like you still got a whole lot of gym. A whole lot of gym still going on. These principles apply when your family starts healing too. Whether they're in the fellowship or not, they're going to see changes in you. And it says, this means a new attitude and a spirit all around. And then farther, it says, sometimes it is to the best interest of all concerned that a couple remain apart. No rule can be laid down. Let the alcoholic continue his program day by day. When the time for living together has come, he will appear to both parties. I read the rest of that for this reason. It was several years later. My mom, who lived out in Kansas, had come to visit us. And I'd been sober a number of years by then, probably about 13, 14 years at the time. And my mom came out to spend a week. Now, my mom knew, she and I had walked down by the beach. And she asked me, she says, son, are you really an alcoholic? I says, well, yeah, I think I am, Mom. I don't understand anything about this. I says, well, Mom, I says, and Mom been married three times to my dad, 21 years, and they ended up divorcing. Why? Dad's drinking. A couple years later, she married a man. What was he? He was an alcoholic. And then the third one was an alcoholic. And as I laid those out, I says, Mom, what was Dad? Oh, your dad was a bad drinker. Take off, wouldn't see for days. He was a bad, bad drinker, and he got mean. And then I said, what about the second husband? And this is, I've never forgot this. She says, son, yeah, Johnny was an alcoholic, but he went to work every day, and he put food on the table. In other words, it was okay for him, you know, even if he was, because on a weekend, he'd be passed out the whole time. And then finally, he passed away, and she remarried the third man and another alcoholic. And that ended in devastation, too. And I asked Mom, and then I finally saw her face. It was one of just, it sunk in. And I thought, oh, God, I hurt Mom. I didn't want to do that. You know, it was just, and she said, I understand, son. And from that day up until the time she came to visit us when I had about 12, 14 years sober, she and my wife were out in the kitchen. We were having a big dinner and people were coming over. They were out there laughing, joking. But I heard my wife say to my mom, Mom, she says, he's a good man. She says he's a good husband. He's a good father. He's a good grandfather. I love him and I trust him. And I heard my mom say, I always knew he could be a good man if he just put that liquor bottle. I still get emotional when I think about it. They didn't know I heard it either. I mean, I was, well, I must have been eavesdropping some, you know, just to see what kind of trash they were going to put on me, just to be on the safe side. But I've never forgotten that was two women that knew me better than anybody else. And yet, at that time, both of them knew there had been a remark. Not because I was special. It's because, just like so many of you, I started following the directions and trying to practice equals in all my affairs. Not perfectly, but I wanted, because it began to feel better that way with my children and with my grandchildren and stuff. And I got great grandchildren, go to the ball games and all that stuff. Barely limp around there, but I sit there in the air conditioning in the car. But that's, those are the things that begin to transpire and happen for, as a direct result of alcoholics and those that are part of all the steps that we all practice, those 12 traditions that give us that stuff, how to keep that thing moving. I'm extremely grateful. And I'm still taking on air. You know, that's always a good thing too. Hand it back.
All right, we're going to turn over to page 100. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances.
So this paragraph just has so much hope for me when I first came in and today, the idea of walking shoulder to shoulder with someone, because I can definitely be a snob. Like I can be an intellectual snob, I can food snob, whatever it is, and I will make you feel like this small. And so I, as a defense, sometimes would default to that. And I had this woman who, you know, I asked her 5 times to be my sponsor, and she kept saying, no, I've seen you, and no, you're not ready. And I was like, what is it going to take? And so finally, you know, I kept coming back. And she was like, okay, I'll start working with you because I can see a shift in your personality and your willingness. So I was excited at the idea of putting my life into God's hands at that point, because my background is in education. So I thought I had like maybe 65 different books on recovery at the time, and, you know, cross-referencing them and quoting them and talking about this and that. And like, I'm so full of shit. And she just said, you only need one book, right? The big book. You don't need all that other garbage that you have going on. Like the solution. And then I even had a woman who in the very beginning was like, you know, don't make any major life changes without running it by your committee. And so what did I do? Like I had 60 days, he had 30 days. We were a match made in heaven. The women kept telling me like, this is probably not the direction you want to go in. And I even said to my sponsor, like, we're on our first date, we're going to the Joel Osteen concert. Okay. So she didn't believe me. We actually did. And I ran into her there. And it was one of those situations where, you know, it was like, nobody believed me. Like I would, one time I was at the VBRC and I smelled like alcohol and someone was like, have you been drinking? And I was like, oh no, somebody spilled beer on me at a party. You know, I could not be honest in the beginning. So slowly over time it was, and I've had to even now go back and say, you know what? We were talking earlier and I totally lied to you. You asked me about XYZ and I defaulted to my norm, which is to lie and protect my own interest and to make you think I look really good. So it took a while for me to start to trust another woman, and to understand, like, if I'm going to put something in God's hands in 20 minutes, I can't be like, hey, can you give me a status update? Like, I'm really impatient and I need whatever I just asked for now. And so conversely, moving forward, I started working with these 3 women last year. And would you not know that all 3 of them are me, like in different phases? And one of them was an 18-year-old. And the way that I could see my life playing out at age 18 and the way that I saw how I treated other people, and it was hard. I mean, it was a mirror looking up to me and day by day and seeing crap that I had said to sponsors and lies and manipulations. And I obviously know more than you know. And then, you know, the other 2 women, it's different forms of me. You know, one hates their job, one complains, one manipulates, one tries to avoid the whole thing. Oh yeah, everything's fine. Life is good. I'm doing what you said. I'll call you tomorrow. So it's such a beautiful circle to come around and say, like, first of all, sponsoring I've had amazing sponsors and all those sponsors that I've had, but I definitely have learned that, like, I am not your solution, right? The solution is in the big book, and it's a higher power and a relationship with a higher power. So but I didn't know how to access it. And so I had to have other people help me to understand that. Cause when I first came in, I heard people talking about a spiritual awakening, and I was like, where do I buy that? Like, can I download the app and get that? You know, like I don't know. I don't want to do all this work. I'm avoiding, you know, looking at myself. And so the beautiful thing is now my life is definitely still got challenges and I have things going on, but having a sponsor, having women in my life that I can call on and just run my day by, sponsoring other women and seeing that side of it. Like, it's amazing that I really realized that alcoholism for me is such a disease of perception. You know, if my life does not look like what I think it should look at, for example, recently I decided without running it by anyone that I was going to start dating, right? Yeah. So that got real fun, real fast. And my life got really unmanageable. And I was like, where's my serenity? It's gone. And because I was defaulting that some other human being was going to be able to give me what I needed or wanted, in my mind, I should have been at a position at this point in my sobriety that I could handle dating. And it took a while for, you know, my friends and my sponsor to be like, yeah, I don't think this is working well for you. You still have a lot of healing to do and you're still attracting garbage people. So, and that's okay. Like, life doesn't have to look like what I think it should look like at this point in my life. Like, life today is amazing. Like, I have the ability, one, not to have to drink or drug to change the way that I feel. I'm not burning down the world around me. I'm not getting arrested. I'm not getting calls from jail. Although we did get a collect call from jail today, and my mom was like, where's Elizabeth at? Thankfully I was in the other room, but it is an amazing world to live in. And so I'm just really grateful that I do have all those examples that help me grow and change. And
this particular paragraph, and has always meant a lot to me because it really speaks when it says both you and the new must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. And if you persist, remarkable things will happen. That's true in my case, and guys that I know that are sponsored and people they have sponsored. The message goes on and it says, we realize that the things which came to us, we put ourselves in God's hands, were better than anything we could have planned. I don't know how many times in my life sober that has happened. All of a sudden, doors will open that I never knew existed. I'd be given opportunities. There's been setbacks, loss of family members, you know, passing a granddaughter, my oldest granddaughter, passing away from brain cancer. A grandson that spent several years in one of the state prisons and for his gang activity. I could remember going up and praying outside the prison for him because I couldn't go in. They wouldn't let me come in because they had him on kind of lockdown. So he lived in a room by himself, or not a room, but a cell by himself. And so all those things came. And yet every time one of those came, Alcoholics Anonymous was right there for me. Every time, you're going to get through this, you're going to make it through. And every time that's been the case, you know, better than anything we could have planned, things have happened. That same grandson has spent the time in the prison. He's doing well now. He's up in Pennsylvania. He's got a little baby girl, goes to work every day, makes his own money. He's not always calling looking for a handout. My son goes down every year to Mississippi State University and spreads ashes for our oldest granddaughter that passed away. He was his oldest daughter. And he drives down there every year. So, I mean, those are tragedies and things that happen, but there've been all kinds of rewards. I got two great grandchildren, and both of them, little girl, little boy, both of them are just powerful. I've been to the ball game. He's gonna be a world champion. I told him, he's an Aries. And the granddaughter is an Aries. They're both Aries, those great grandchildren. So I always tell their parents, that's the way we Aries roll. We lead. We don't follow. Get behind them. Just fall in line. That's the way the market is the thing. Of course, my son told me once, he says, Dad, Hitler was an Aries. I said, get out of here. I didn't know. I said, Hitler wasn't no Aries. So I looked it up. It was missed by one day. And I told him, I called him. Boy, you're lying. He says, don't forget the time change, Dad. I said, get away from me. Smart. I cut you out a will years ago. I said, this just confirmed me doing that. You know, but sometimes you got to laugh about some of the stuff too, because if we can't laugh, and we all, I've been with many of you in here, we laugh or we joke, and yet you'll see people go off in little pairs or something off to the side, and they're talking. They're taking care of business. They're talking with a sponsor. They're talking with another person that they trust. And that's what this is about. They're going to have to throw dirt in my face to get me out of this. It's just that simple. I may not do it as great as maybe I'd like to, but I'm still here, just like each of you. No matter what your age is, what your conditions are, you're still here. Whether you're a newcomer or you've been here a long time or somewhere in between, this deal works. It absolutely is effective. It's just a matter of, will we do it? That's, you know, that's the whole thing. It's up to us. People can rally around us and try to help us and support it. But meanwhile, we look the other way and say, oh yeah, that sounds good. And then we'll walk right back out and do what we always did, you know, pour me another shot of liquor. And then, oh, well, someone also let me confiscate my truck back, you know, because when they lock me up, they always lock my truck up too. That gets expensive after a while. It's bad enough having to bail yourself out, but then you have to bail your truck out too. It's just disrespectful, you know? But I add that humor because sometimes we forget that. If things get so serious, we forget to have some humor along the way. You know, what are we here for? I don't know what each of us. I know what I'm here for today is to hopefully to be of service, to carry the message, and remind I've still got another 24 hours. That's what's important.
All right, we're going to finish up on page 102 and 103. Your job now is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. And then the last reading on page 103. After all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody or anything. We have to.
This part of the big book where we're talking about assuming we are spiritually fit, we must, you know, in the beginning, people said we must not go where liquor served, we must not have our homes, we must shun our friends for drink. I had lunch with my best partying friend, you know, last week. And she expressed how hurt she was that I got sober and that I abandoned her. And she, you know, I let her talk for a little while. And then I simply just said something like, you know, I hear your pain and I understand, you know, removing myself from your life was difficult for you. And let me kind of tell you about how I had to do that. Like, I could not even walk down the grocery store aisle where liquor was, right? At a restaurant, I wouldn't face the bar. I wouldn't go to my niece's third birthday because it's July 4th and there was going to be a keg there, right? So those were places I knew I had no business going because I could not be there and be of maximum service. I couldn't even, well, I would drink. So now, like, fast forwarding, because my higher power, I believed, like, removed the desire to drink and use. I'm able to go anywhere, right? And do anything as long as I have a purpose to be there. Liquor bottles and drinking and all of that doesn't even affect me to the point where it's like, okay, whatever, that's your deal. But being able to definitely go where I'm asked or where I'm needed. Like, I went to the psych center on Friday night to bring a meeting in. And again, there was a person there that was Elizabeth, you know, 7 years ago. She was like giving her resume to me. And when I went to treatment, I told the first counselor they weren't qualified to treat me. Their education wasn't enough and that I needed someone else. And so I went to the director and he was like, God, you are, you're a piece of work, you know? And so now it's definitely where I've kind of seen where, as long as I keep continuing to say like, what is your will, not mine? What, how can I be of assistance in this situation? It's not always my default to stop and pray. I'm definitely very selfish and self-serving. Like if it's going to make me look good, yeah, I'll probably do it. But if it's actually going to require me to like give of my time and service, and then I'm reminded like, people were there for you. They showed up for you, even when they didn't want to, even when you were calling like 30 times, you know, completely intoxicated, people were there for you. So I definitely love that I'm now able to stay in the firing line. I'm able to be in uncomfortable situations. I'm able to show up. I'm able to keep commitments. And you never know where the seed is going to be planted with someone. Like I had a situation recently where, long story short, I caught someone in a major lie, the fact that he was married. And so we started kind of talking about recovery in that. And I was just able to kind of give my experience, and he definitely has pursued getting some help now. So I definitely know that my problems are always of my own making, and that it's my thinking that I definitely have to struggle with, and I can't do it alone. I have to have other women. To have a home group, I have to have a higher power sponsor, and just the willingness to continue to grow.
This here is your job, and now to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful, and you should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motors, and God will keep you unharmed. I'll try to keep this short. There are individuals sitting in here, and some of them know my history and stuff. But one of the things is I got introduced to going into the prisons for many years. And so during that, some of the old timers from North Carolina came up and supported us when we first started that. And they come in, and we'd had a big, like a hall here, and we'd have 100 men in there, and they, and some of these old timers be telling their stories and all that kind of stuff. And some of them had been in prison for a number of years. And then when they were released, had found a way out, got sober. And the rest is all good stuff after that. And so I'd been hired at a place to come in as a director in this prison. And the whole prison was going to be for alcoholics or addicts in the prison. So I nothing ventured, nothing gained. So anyway, I worked there for almost 10 years. So when I finally retired out, I was always out on the yard mixing it up with the guys and stuff. And they all, hey, Mr. Willis, you know, this, yeah. So what do you want now, man? I said, I ain't got no change in my pocket. No, I can't carry nothing, you know? And I just, oh, we ain't want nothing now. So I was out on the yard. And one guy comes running down the thing for me. And I knew he was getting ready to leave. And he had two other guys with him, and they're all running toward me. I'm the only guy out on the yard. There's no other staff out there. There's no officers, just these three guys like wild men. And one of them shaking his hand. He got a paper and said, Mr. Willis, you're the first to know. I got my papers. I'm going home. You know, and he's shaking his thing. So I said, Mr. So-and-so, as you know, there's no screaming out here on this yard. Well, it's only you and the three of us. I said, it doesn't make any difference. I says, besides, I says, you know better than that. I says, you think you're ready to go now? Yeah, and the other two guys are, you know, they're shaking. No, he ain't no more close to getting out of here. So I says, calm it down. So I turned to walk away, and one of them hollered, hey, Mr. Willis, we understand you're leaving. You're retired out of here. You can't go yet. We still need more from you. So I stood there. I said, oh, really? So I turned around where nothing but my backside was looking at him. As you see in the back of these britches, there ain't much there in the back of them britches, Mr. Willis. I says, there was when I walked in this place. I said, you ain't getting no more out of me. I said, I'm going home. And they started laughing and everything, and I walked on down the concrete. But one thing about it is the humor sometimes, especially in all settings. And I do, I use a lot of humor. Most of us self-deprecate. I mean, every now and then I'll get one of the guys I sponsor and throw them under the bus every now and then just to feel right with it. So they'll know I still love them. But the truth of the matter is, We've cried enough in our drinks. We've cried enough in the misery that we put others through and put ourselves through. There's a time to be joyful. There's a time. That's what the miracle of this is. We talk about it all the time in our home groups and meetings and stuff. The problem is, can we hold that together and present it in such a way just naturally that others will see, I don't know what that old girl's got or what that old boy's got, but I think I want some of that. Looks better than what I live. Don't know for sure how that happens. Just like each of us, we had a first time we rolled up in here, but we're here. That means there's hope. That means this deal works. Nobody told you they'd love you today. I love y'all, you know, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and to be with my own kind.
Thanks, John. All right, we're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. Seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. You can sign up for email on our website, simpleactions.net. If you do not want to contribute in cash, we have PayPal and Venmo. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements?
My name is Elizabeth. I'm an alcoholic. Next Monday, we have supper and a speaker here. Potluck starts at 6. The speaker is Jerry W. from Raleigh, North Carolina. That'll be at 7. So please come out and help us to celebrate the fact that we're through the 12 steps and we're going to start a new cycle.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any other announcements? Yes. Hi, Sam. Thank you, Sam. Anybody else? Yes. Hi, Eric. Just make it up. We all do.
I'm going to dance.
Okay, wait. What is the date? 17th. Okay. Thank you. All right.
Can't get a break, can you, Eric?
Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Literature is available on the table with the boombox. Everything is free except for the books. You can talk to any home group member. We suggest you have a big book and read it. Sponsorship. Sponsorship is in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. If you're shy, you can email info@simpleactions.net. Someone will get back to you. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. We're super proud of our website. I keep saying that. Simpleactions.net. Meeting after the meeting. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd Street and Colonial Avenue. In closing, can we please thank Jim and Elizabeth again? Thanks to everyone who participated after the Lord's Prayer. Everyone will have a chance to say thank you to them personally. And Grant has volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page.
Hey, Grant.
Abandon your faith, give freely of what some of us have trudged the road.
All right, we'll stay seated and say the Lord's Prayer.
Thank you.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever. Amen. right on.
I'm still upset about it.
Get up.
Good job. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Oh,
I'm upset about the.
Thank you, guys.
He's really not an Aries.